Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Hello everyone, thank you for listening to another episode of The Two-Man Game. This episode is brought to you by Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/almighty to get your free 30-day trial and a free audiobook. Once again, go to audibletrial.com/almighty to get your free audiobook.
Welcome in. You are back once again with us, with your boys, Matt Barnes, Chris Hines, on The Two-Man Game, the podcast brought to you by the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I am Matt Barnes. You can find me on Twitter at Matt_Two-Man Game. I am, of course, joined by Chris Hines. You can find him on Twitter at Simply Hoops with a Z, and all of his writing online at simplyhoops.wordpress.com. We're coming to you midweek, February 7th, 2017, fresh off of another Super Bowl, crazy Super Bowl, but we don't talk NFL on this show. The NBA is getting going. We are just short of the All-Star break right now. We're about 50 games through for all teams, and getting right into it, we're going to talk about one of the guys who has probably been one of the most slept on at his position in the league, but is starting to gain a lot of attention this year because his team is starting to come on. We're talking about John Wall, the point guard for the Washington Wizards. The Wizards currently sit at 30-21. They are fourth in the East. John Wall is having a career year. He's dropping 23 a night, 10.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds. Career high in field goal percentage this year, right at 45%. That team is, I don't know if we'd say that they're overachieving or if they're just finally coming into their own under Scott Brooks. So, Chris, just getting right into this whole thing with John Wall, do you see him emerging as a top five point guard in the league? And what do you think of the Wizards season so far to this point?
I think it's interesting to see where the Wizards have ended up. I mean, because when they started off, they were on the slide for a while. They had a rough losing streak going. But John Wall has been playing on another level. He and Bradley Beal, I've always thought that when they're healthy and when they both can be out there on the floor consistently, then they can, you know, they can play well. They can be a top backcourt in the league. But, you know, Bradley Beal has been hurt so much. I think that having him there helps John Wall a lot because he doesn't have to carry the load constantly. You know, having Bradley Beal, somebody to kick it out to, that's super helpful, man. That's like his shooter. You know, he's not shooting amazing from three. It's about 39% right now, but it's still good enough. You know, so I think that John Wall is on his way to being top five. I won't say he's just there just yet, but I definitely put him top 10 for now, especially with the way he's been playing, his momentum. Just the fight to help the Cavs the other night. Great game. John Wall had a great game. And John Wall has been, when he plays against other top guards, he seems to go at him, you know, with no fear. And I love that about him, man. So he's definitely top 10. I won't say top 5 just yet.
Right. Yeah. I feel like if we look at the point guards, this is the golden era of point guards.
Oh yes,
well, just looking at it. Yeah, I mean, we've got Steph Curry and Russell Westbrook. Both of those guys, I would say, are right in the top three, along with James Harden with his emergence as a lead guard this year. The transition from shooting guard to point guard under Mike D'Antoni. So I would say that if you talk to people around the league, that it's probably a safe bet that those three are the three main guys talking about top three point guards in the league. And then we get down to another tier where we've got guys that are on the come up, and then we've got guys that are just starting to get a little bit older, talking about a Chris Paul. But Chris Paul and Kyrie Irving, Damian Lillard, Mike Conley. For me, John Wall is somewhere in the mix with that second tier of guys. I do think that this year they will probably advance out of the first round. If the playoffs were to start today, they would be taking on Atlanta, and I think that that's a matchup I could see them winning, especially if they have the home court advantage. They did have quite a winning streak on their home court until the game that you mentioned yesterday, which was just an unbelievable game between the Cavs and the Wizards. It's probably one of the better games I've seen all season. They're putting up points in crazy bunches. It ended up being like 140 to 135. It did go into overtime, but it was quite a game. So John Wall, he's on the come up. He is definitely, like you said, for sure a top 10 guy. There are so many guys, point guards in the league, that are playing at an extremely high level, and he's definitely one of them. So I don't know. I mean, John Wall, he was the number one pick coming out of Kentucky, and he has been in the league now for 6 going on 7 seasons. Is this what you saw coming out of Kentucky for John Wall? Is this about what you thought his career would be, or did you expect more or less up to now?
I think this is, you know, to the point I expected him to reach. But when they added Bradley Beal, I always felt like that was what would be able to get John Wall over the hump. Because if you notice the way the NBA is going, you have to have 2 backcourt players that can play. You know, the Warriors have Curry and Thompson. And the Cavs, theirs is different because they have LeBron, who's pretty much every position with Kyrie. You know, the Celtics, they have Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas. You can't win an NBA now if you don't have a good backcourt. And you need 2 good players there at those positions that are a threat on offense, defense, like they can play. And John Wall does it all on both ends. And Bradley Beal is just that addition. And I think together they're much stronger than apart, you know, because when Bradley, the last few seasons, we've seen him go out early. We've seen the frustration from John Wall because Bradley Beal just can't stay healthy. This season, he's been a lot healthier, and I mean, look what they're doing. So I expected him to be here. I didn't expect him to get too far in the playoffs, but now, this season, they have a chance to because everything is sort of opened up. Other than the Cavs, I mean, Celtics are the only other real threat, and the Raptors. Then we've seen the Hornets fall off. We don't even need to talk about the Knicks. So nobody else is really in the mix in the East.
Right, yeah, there are a bunch of teams that are hovering around 8 to 10 games above 500 when we talk about the Wizards, the Hawks, and then Toronto and Boston are slightly better than those teams. Well, for me, the interesting thing about the Washington Wizards is the emergence of Otto Porter Jr. You look at this guy. He balled out at Georgetown. He was a phenomenal college talent. He came into the league, and he rode the pine pretty hard for the first year of his career. He barely played. And I think one thing also that has made a difference for the Wizards is Scott Brooks, as strange as that might sound, because Scott Brooks, I don't really think, is a top-tier coach in the league, but he's certainly an upgrade over Randy Whitman. Randy Whitman, oftentimes on the sidelines, just looked confused. I mean, he looked like he really had no idea what the hell was going on. So I don't think he got the most out of that team. So what do you make of the emergence of Otto Porter? Is that the third guy that they need, or is there someone else that's going to emerge? And do you see the difference, like I do, in the Brooks and Randy Whitman situation?
Actually, I do. I always felt like that was one of their problems because before Whitman was there, they had, what, a couple coaches? They looked like the Browns. It was just bad. You know, you can't have that many coaches cycling through your team because most people ignore it, fans ignore it, but in reality, coaching is one of the most important factors in NBA basketball. Like, there are about 4 coaches who pretty much dominate the championship rankings. That's Red Auerbach, Popovich, Phil Jackson, and Pat Riley. Those guys have, I think, 20-something of the NBA championship in the last, like, 30-something years. So you need to have a good coach. You got to have somebody at the head that knows what they're doing, you know? So Whitman, he just wasn't the guy.
No, definitely not. And Otto Porter Jr., do you really think that he is going to be that third guy, or is it going to be somebody like maybe even a Markieff Morris who has emerged lately?
I would give more so to Otto Porter. I feel like he's been developing. Him and Kelly Oubre are like, they're sharing those minutes at the three, which is good. And again, some teams, they can play him at the four. It's like they have a good setup there with those two. They should share those 3 minutes. You know, I feel like both of them are developing at sort of the same pace. Porter's coming on a lot lately, but definitely not the conversation for most improved. He could do more, but he has gotten a lot better.
Right, right. That's a guy that I did see turning into a solid pro. He was the top three pick in the draft, and like I said, he really did ball out at Georgetown. The college game is quite a bit different from the pros. He is more of a mid-range guy, or at least he was a mid-range guy in college. He has developed a three-point shot now that he is in the NBA, but he was really, I would say, around 15 feet and in college, and he's made the transition nicely after a couple of seasons. So we look at the Wizards. They are top four in the East currently. I'd say that they're going to stay somewhere in that 4-5 range. They could surge and end up challenging for the three spot, but I would say 4 or 5 is safe. John Wall is emerging. He's having a great year. He did make the All-Star team once again. And things are just looking good in D.C. for these guys. And they're young. They've got a lot of promise. They've got this coach who seems to fit well with their team. So things are looking good in D.C. They should make a nice run of the playoffs. Nothing too crazy yet, but I could see them making it to the second round.
Yeah, so, I definitely agree.
Right, yeah, they are. They're having a nice season. Props to them, props to John Wall. He's looked good all year, and he's putting up numbers. So things are looking good in D.C. And we are going to move on from that, transitioning into trade talks. The trade deadline is going to be approaching here really soon. We've got Jahlil Okafor, the odd man out in Philly, with that logjam at the 4-5 with Joel Embiid, Nerlens Noel, Dario Saric, and Okafor. A lot of rumors about Jahlil Okafor in the press looking for a trade. A lot of teams, I've seen it reported as many as 8 teams interested in acquiring this guy. We're looking at a guy who was the third pick in the draft just a few years ago. He had a situation where he looked like he just somebody shot his dog at the press conference when he was introduced. He dropped the jersey on the floor. He's never really looked like he wanted to be there. And now we're talking about a guy who was basically the centerpiece of a championship team at Duke just a few years ago with himself and Tyus Jones, the NCAA's dirtiest player, and Grayson Allen, and a couple other guys, Justice Winslow. And he's been marginalized now this year. He's got the third worst real plus minus out there in the entire league for all the stat geeks that listen to the show. He's at -4.8 real plus minus, which is terrible. He's averaging 11.4 points and less than 5 boards. And he's a big guy. He's just really, he's completely inefficient on defense and rebounding. He can put the ball in the basket, but that's not really what Philly needs with the emergence of Joel Embiid. It's being reported that Philly is looking for a pick for Jahlil Okafor, and they're talking to New Orleans. New Orleans currently has the 7th worst record in the entire league, so we're looking at a pick that's going to be mid-lottery. We look at Jahlil Okafor and this just train wreck dumpster fire of a career that he's put together these first couple of seasons so far. And I think the question that we're both asking ourselves is this guy worth the whatever number 7 pick in next year's draft, as loaded as that draft is going to be? Do you think they should pull the trigger on that move?
I feel like if you're going to get a pick, this year is a year to get a pick. I mean, that draft is full. It's going to be crazy. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. But if you can get a pick, yeah. But Okafor has been disappointing. When he was at Duke, I always knew that he wouldn't last in today's NBA, because you can, the college game is dramatically different compared to NBA. You know, in the college game, they still slow it down and post a lot. And, you know, that you can still get that done. In the NBA, you rarely see post-ups now. Like, it's very, very rare. It's more about stretching the floor. Big guy has to be able to shoot. If you can't shoot, then, I mean, you're pretty much, you become expendable. Like, look at Marc Gasol, one of the best post-up big men we've seen. Now he's shooting threes and shooting them pretty good. But Okafor doesn't have that ability. He hasn't even attempted to grow in that area. And I don't see him growing in that area. So he's sort of obsolete nowadays in today's NBA. I saw it coming, just because the only way he could really score was bullying smaller guys in the post. In the NBA, first of all, you're not bigger than anybody anymore. And then you're not going to get the ball in the post. So you have to be able to make at least a 15-footer. You know, Zach Randolph made a career out of that. But, I mean, now if they can get a pick, you definitely, whatever move you make to get a pick this year, you have to get a pick. This is the season. If there was no other season to get a draft pick, this is the year.
Right. Yeah, I feel like New Orleans would be kind of stupid to give up that pick that's going to be mid-lottery for Jahlil Okafor. And just a couple of things that you touched on. He is super effective in college, but he did play for Coach K. And I feel like Coach K has a tendency to kind of accentuate the skills of the players that he has. And he might make guys look a little bit better in his system than they actually end up being in the pros. Is that fair? I think we've seen a fair amount of guys from Duke kind of just come to the league and things don't turn out the way that we expected. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's definitely true. I mean, Duke Twitter fans wouldn't like that, but I mean, it's a fact. It's true.
Mm-hmm. And just really looking at him and the way that he's handled himself, I really feel like spending a number 7 pick on this guy, I feel like it would be super risky. And you don't know if it is guaranteed to be the number 7 pick. We've seen teams that had fairly decent records end up with the number 1 pick. I'm thinking of the year that the Cavaliers won 33 games and they completely just crapped their pants and wasted the number 1 pick on Anthony Bennett, but they were not the worst team in the league that year. So you never know that you could actually get the top pick or even a top 3 pick and not be the worst team in the league. This guy was just going crazy after he was drafted. In his first year in the league, he's out and he's throwing haymakers at fans in the streets, getting arrested, mouthing off to people in the streets, mouthing off to fans in the crowd. He just seems like a loose cannon. Also that he just, I don't know if it's his disposition or his body language, but he seems like he's just lazy and he just doesn't give a damn. So I think that spending a number 7 pick or just the potential for something mid-lottery on Jahlil Okafor, I feel like it's crazy. I feel like it's too early to use the term bust on Jahlil Okafor, but I feel like he's trending in that direction. I remember earlier in the season, I think that we both thought that Nerlens Noel was going to be the guy to go. Is it just that they want him out, or what do you think?
I think they see what you see. I sort of see it too. That kind of work ethic is a little questionable. You know, that motor is questionable. And I've seen a lot of embarrassing plays, and he doesn't seem like he shows up to play a lot. You know, I'm not big on Okafor. Nerlens Noel, on the other hand, he can play some defense. He seems like he cares. Like, I've seen him, you know, mm-hmm. just get a reaction out of him. I don't see the same heart in Okafor. So I think they see what you see. I would get rid of Okafor too.
Right. I think that for me, you pretty much touched on it and you said it. Nerlens Noel is willing to do the dirty work, willing to be the garbage man, and he's willing to do the little things that need to be done in order to win. And it doesn't seem like Jahlil Okafor is that guy. So very risky to spend a pick on a trade for Jahlil Okafor, if you ask me. But I'm not running the Sixers or the Pelicans. But I think either way you go, it is very risky, and it could turn out to be something that we look at as a stupid move in a few years if Jahlil Okafor does in fact flame out. So we're going to move on from Jahlil Okafor and that trade and the disaster that has been the first couple of years of his career, and we're going to transition into a segment that we've been getting into for the past few episodes called Who'd You Rather? And we've got some pretty interesting stuff that we're going to be looking at in these next three topics. The first thing that we're going to get into is who had the more efficient season. And we're looking at two of the top players in the entire league, LeBron James and Kevin Durant. And we're talking about the 2012-13 championship season for LeBron James and this current season that Kevin Durant is having for the Golden State Warriors. So these two guys, 12-13 LeBron James, 16-17 Kevin Durant, who's had the more efficient season?
Oh, man, that is a tough one because that's a tough one because LeBron just I had to say LeBron. But I will give it to Durant. This year, his defense has went up a notch because of the team he's playing with. You know, he can exert much more energy on that side of the floor. He's become the rim protector for the Warriors because now he doesn't have to work extra hard to get a shot. He doesn't have to try to score every possession like he did with the Thunder. Now he can really just sort of catch his breath. And instead of doing that, he uses that energy to play defense. And I love it. I love seeing him come across the lane and sending shots out of bounds. Like, you need that from one of your guys, especially when you don't have a traditional rim protector. So he's having a good year, but LeBron that year was just on another level, man. That was one of the years that LeBron solidified himself as like one of the best ever. That was when he really started to transcend, you know. He started to really, really climb the ladder of the greats right there, because, man, he had a crazy year that year.
He definitely did. Just a quick rundown on these two guys and these numbers for both of these seasons. 12-13 LeBron James is at 26.8 points, 8 boards, 7.3 assists. All pretty typical LeBron James type numbers. But when we look at his field goal percentage, he shot 56.5% from the field that season, which is just insane for a small forward. I mean, LeBron is sort of positionless. He plays everywhere on the court, but 56.5% is just phenomenal. He shot 40% from three that year, and when you take out the threes out of the equation, he shot 60% on his two-point field goals. And we all obviously know what happened at the end of that season. That was the second season of the Miami Heat back-to-back of the 4 years that LeBron was there, winning in the second and third year. That was the year of all of the things that they did with the second title. It was also the year of the 27-game win streak. I believe they were 66-16 that season. Very, very solid. But we look at Kevin Durant. He was 25.8 points this season, 8.4 rebounds. Not quite as many assists as LeBron James, 4.8. And then the field goal percentage, there's a slight drop-off from LeBron. He's shooting 53.7% to LeBron's 56.5%. But when we look at what Kevin Durant does, where he spends a lot of his time, he shoots a lot of shots, 18 feet and further out. So for him to be shooting 53.7% is pretty remarkable. We look at the Warriors, they're 43-8. So it's safe to say that they're probably going to eclipse the 66-16 mark of the 2012-13 Miami Heat. But we still don't know whether or not they are going to win the title. Things are looking good for them. There is a good chance that they're going to win. They probably have a better chance than any of the other squads in the league, but we still don't know if they are going to win and if Cleveland is going to be able to give them a run. So I think you're right picking LeBron, but both guys, especially considering that perimeter players, just unbelievable, unbelievable numbers, especially with the field goal percentage. So
yeah,
we're going to move on.
Years, man.
Right? Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, For anybody to shoot 54% or 56% as a perimeter player is just as awesome. So, I mean, it's great to see. We look, both of us look at the 2012-13 LeBron James season as something of a historic matter when it comes to just being a fan of the game of basketball and seeing what he was really able to do that year and how successful they were. And it's something that I think that we'll probably both remember for quite some time. So moving on from that one, this one, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this, because this is concerning the upcoming draft, and we kind of touched on it earlier with the whole Jahlil Okafor thing. We've got who is the better pro prospect. We've got Markelle Fultz out of the University of Washington, and we've got Lonzo Ball, the point guard for the UCLA Bruins. So we've got these two guys. You're the GM of Boston, or maybe perhaps Phoenix, and you've got the number one pick in the draft. Who's the guy that you're taking, Fultz or Ball?
Man, that's a tough one. I feel like Fultz is, I would say he's the better prospect. The thing is, the way the NBA is going, again, you need good backcourt players. So Ball can shoot, but I feel like he doesn't play defense enough, like consistently, to where, because let's be honest, every NBA point guard, none of them can really guard each other. They all can get 30 on each other. But I feel like I feel like he's that guy where players will come in and say, I'm getting 45 tonight. You know, I don't feel like I see enough on defense. And it's really hard to see how good Fultz really is, because he's playing at Washington by himself. Like, literally by himself. I can't name another player on that team. And nobody really shows up. So when you're playing by yourself, especially in college, we know he's going to be there for 1 year. It's really hard to say how good a player is, because he has to do everything. And he's probably exhausted every game. It's just so much frustration. And I really think the biggest issue in Washington is the coaching, but that's another topic. But with all of these different factors, it's hard to really gauge how good Fultz really is. So I would have to take Ball, just because I don't know what I can get from Fultz fully. Yeah, I would take a Lonzo Ball.
Right. Any concern about his shooting form and his release point? He sort of shoots the ball underneath his chin. His release point is really low. Do you think that translates to the pro game?
I think that it will, because, you know, people talked about Jason Kidd the same way, and that's really been his comparison. You could say that might be an issue, but we've seen players with terrible jump shots still make shots. So I feel like, if anything, they may try to switch it up for him a little bit. But I just feel like he looks like a natural shooter. Like, he can naturally score, and he's a good passer. He's a great passer. You know, he just plays on the offensive end with so much energy. I feel like he's gonna produce. Depending on what team he goes to, he needs to be in a good situation, though. Him nor Fultz are good enough to where they can be great wherever they go. They need to be in a perfect situation almost.
Right. I think for me, Lonzo Ball, I mean, this guy's 6'6". He's got the NBA body. He's got handles. He's averaging just under 8 assists, which is an incredibly high number for college, considering that it's a 40-minute game. Both of these guys are playing a ton of minutes. I know that the season's short, but 36 minutes for both guys. Fultz is at 23.2 points, 6 assists, 6 boards. He's shooting 48% from the field, 42% from three. His free throw percentage is a little bit of a cause for concern. He only shoots 64% from the line. The team is awful. You kind of alluded to that. They're 9-14, which is not a good mark, considering that in the college game, typically your non-conference schedule is where you kind of pad your win-loss record, and you bring in some teams that are out of conference that might kind of, I don't know if I can say that they'd be easy wins, but easier than a conference schedule. So 9-14, 5 games under 500 for University of Washington and Markelle Fultz. We look at Lonzo Ball. UCLA has sort of faltered a little bit as of late, but they do have some other players on the team that are, I don't know if Josh Leaf is going to be a good pro, but I think that he will at least get a look in the NBA. So Ball is surrounded with other guys that are going to at least have a shot at making the league. His numbers, he's 54% from the field, which is very solid, 43% from downtown. But him, too, also with the poor free throw shooting, just 67% from the line. So both of these guys, I think, I mean, you touched on it to where they're kind of going to have to be in good situations, but I don't know if that's going to be true for at least one of them, because I would say that if Boston and Phoenix end up with the top two picks, I don't know what you do in that situation, because Boston doesn't need a point guard and Phoenix doesn't really need one either, unless they're going to dump some of the guys that they have. They've got over $140 million tied up in their two point guards and Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight. And Boston, of course, has Isaiah Thomas. So, I mean, how do you draft a point guard to a team where your point guard is averaging 29 a night? I don't know if either team would be better suited to either shop the pick or I just don't know what you're going to do in that situation. It should be interesting to see. I think that if I'm looking at these two guys and if I had to choose one, I'm going to take Fultz, just because I watch this guy and I see flashes of Damian Lillard, and I know that Ball is a special player when it comes to passing. I'm just concerned that he's going to have trouble getting that shot off unless he creates a ton of space, because honestly, like, I don't want to disrespect Lonzo Ball in any way, but he shoots like a girl. So, I mean, his release point is really, really low, and that's going to be a problem. I mean, we've seen it sort of from Steph Curry. His release point isn't particularly high, but compared to Lonzo Ball, his shot looks like Dirk Nowitzki. So, I mean, he just... Lonzo Ball, you need to work on that release point, my man. So, I think that he will probably have to change it, and I'm not sure if he does change it whether or not it's going to be effective, but I do think at the very least he's going to be a great passer. Fultz, I could see carrying a team within a few years, especially if he ends up on a team that has at least a couple other good players, because like you said, the rest of the team for the University of Washington is pretty terrible. So I don't think that he's really enjoyed having a lot of help. You know, I'm sure that he's having fun putting up all those numbers. I just don't know how fun it is on a team that's only won 9 games to this point in the season.
Yeah, it'll be it's got to be frustrating to be in that situation, you know, to be in college and you know you'll be here for a year and you can't win. But then again, he probably looks at it like, well, I'll be a millionaire next year, so whatever.
Right. Very similar to the thing that I think Ben Simmons went through last year, where he played with LSU and they weren't a particularly good team. This is sort of like that, even though I think LSU was slightly better in terms of wins and losses than Washington is this year. So moving on to our final Who'd You Rather of the show, we're going to talk about two of the best shooting guards in the league. One of them is really, really young, and the other one is sort of entering his prime on the best team in the NBA currently. We're talking about Klay Thompson out of the Golden State Warriors and Devin Booker from the Phoenix Suns. And we're going to ask each other and the listeners, who is going to be the better shooting guard in 5 years, Devin Booker or Klay Thompson? What do you think, Chris?
I would say Devin Booker. I feel like when I watch him play, he has a higher ceiling than Klay does. I feel like we've almost seen everything we could see from Klay. He had 37 and a quarter last year. Like, that's just amazing, you know? And I definitely don't think it would be smart for him to leave Golden State and go play somewhere else. Like, why not stay there with Durant and Curry and Draymond and win as much as possible? So as long as he's there, we won't be able to see him play on the next level like we see Devin Booker, because he has to share the ball so much, which isn't a bad thing. But I just, when I watch Booker, the way he heats up, and he can attack more, he can create a little more than Klay can too. And I just see Booker doing a lot more with his career. Because what is he? It's his third year, right? He's on another level, man.
Oh, it's his second season. He was a rookie last year.
Oh, yeah. See, he's going big places. I feel like if he stays in Phoenix, it'll be tough for him, though. You know, because in the NBA now, it's hard to win alone. It's hard to be relevant by yourself. You know, like, if you look at Melo, Melo's been on the decline because he hasn't played with anybody worth mentioning in a while. So Booker has to find a way to get on a team that's at least relevant so that he can, you know, get that, see some of that spotlight.
Right. Yeah, I think that they're sort of hoping that they're either going to be able to make a move with a trade, or they're going to be able to draft one of these guys that we talked about in the previous segment. There was some talk earlier in the week about Phoenix trying to trade for DeMarcus Cousins. Now, I don't know the validity of these trade rumors, but if that was the case, and Booker wasn't mentioned as a piece in that trade, if the Kings are willing to part with Boogie and send him to Phoenix, I think that duo is pretty formidable. So I think that would change things. But just looking at their numbers, like we said, like Chris touched upon, it is Booker's second season. If we look at Klay's second year, he averaged 16.6, 3.7 rebounds, and 2.2 assists. That was the 2012-13 season. Golden State was 47-35. They lost in the second round to San Antonio. And I think that I'm sure that you probably remember that series that they played against the Spurs that year, where they gave them some run. They won a couple of games from them and pushed them pretty far, but they were not able to beat them. Steph Curry and Klay were both really young guys. Mark Jackson was the coach at that point. So he was on a pretty good team, a team that made it to the second round of the playoffs in just his second season. We look at Booker, his second year so far, he had 21.1 points, 3.2 assists, 2.8 rebounds. He is a lot more creative. I think that it's just because he has the liberty to be creative because the Suns depend on him so much more. But he's putting up quite a bit more points. The rebounds and assists are negligible. His field goal percentage isn't really that high. He's shooting 42% from the field, but that's the exact same mark that Klay put up in his second year as well. I think that the glaring difference between these guys comparing the second year of their careers was that Klay was 22 years old and Devin Booker just turned 20. So there's a couple of years there. And it sounds like, oh, it's just a few years, but in a young player's development, 20 to 22, I mean, in those 2 years, I think we can pretty much guarantee that in 2 years, Devin Booker is going to be quite a bit better than he is already. So I think that is something to look at. And I also think that the fact that the Suns are the worst team in the Western Conference, and if it weren't for the Brooklyn Nets, they'd be the worst team in the entire league, looking at the fact that he is probably on the first line of the scouting report. He is the guy that opposing defenses are going to key in on. I think that he's drawing a lot of attention. He's probably getting either the first or second best defender on the opposing team night in and night out, and he's still able to put up 21.1 points. So I think that you saying that Booker is the guy that is going to be better in 5 years, I think that's fair. I think Booker is going to be coming right into his prime and Klay will be at the end of his. I think that the one difference might be that Klay might have 2-3 rings and Devin Booker might still be fighting to just get into.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.